It's on, the biggest Maytag sale of the year at Lowe's. Buy two select laundry appliances and get up to a $100 bonus via instant rebate. Shop all things Maytag, including the new stackable Pet Pro laundry system that removes pet hair from clothes. Lowe's, we help, you save. Offer valid through 531. See store for pricing and offer details. Advertise savings on all major Maytag appliances through Maytag.com and participating retailers. Prices may vary. Additional terms and conditions apply.
This season of Desert Island Dishes is sponsored by Maldon Salt, the finest natural sea salt flakes handcrafted from the British coastline. They are, quite frankly, the masters of salt, putting craft, care, and passion into everything they do. You only have to read one of my recipes to know that I use Maldon Salt every single day for all of my cooking. To say I am a fan is an understatement, so to be working with them this season is a dream come true. I'm often asked about the secret to getting better at cooking, and my answer is honestly always the same. It comes down to seasoning, and not just as an afterthought. You have to season at every stage, and that's why I love Maldon Salt. It's light and delicate due to the soft and crunchy pyramid-shaped flakes, and it's just the easiest way to take simple dishes to the next level. Trust me, your cooking life will not be the same. Thank you very much to Maldon Salt. Hi, I'm Margie Nomura, and welcome to the Desert Island Dishes podcast. This is the podcast where every week I ask my guests to choose their seven Desert Island dishes. These range from finding out about the dish that most reminds them of their childhood, the best dish they've ever eaten, and of course, the last dish they would choose to eat before being cast off to the desert island. The question is, what would you choose as your last meal? Hi, how are you all? I hope everyone is having a good week. We have a lovely episode for you today with the brilliant Eleanor. I feel so lucky that I get to do this podcast and to meet such amazing guests. And it's really fun to talk to a range of different people, not only doing different things, but also at a different place in their career. I think there are so many lessons to be learned from every stage. Eleanor is definitely in the whirlwind, and it was brilliant to catch up with her and hear her thoughts on everything that's happened over the last year or so. I really think this is just the beginning for her, and it's going to be very exciting to watch it all unfold. So without further ado, here are Eleanor's Desert Island Dishes. My guest today is Eleanor Wilkinson. Eleanor is a content creator and recipe developer from East Yorkshire. Having always loved food and cooking, she made the decision to quit her job in the charity sector and embark on turning her passion into a full-time career. She started her series One Pot, One Portion, recipes for people who eat, cook, or live alone, but are tired of washing up, and was soon getting millions of views on social media and quickly amassed some 600,000 followers on Instagram. She has now released a cookbook of the same name and counts the one and only Nigella Lawson as a huge fan. Nigella described the book as a brilliant, beyond brilliant idea. Welcome, Eleanor.
Thank you so much for having me. Yeah,
such a pleasure to have you on Desert Island Dishes. And congratulations on everything. It's all going so well. And it really has been so fun to watch from afar and see all the brilliant things that you're doing. It seems to have happened quite quickly. Mm. You're obviously still in the middle of it all. How does it feel?
Well, thank you very much. That's really kind. It feels incredibly surreal. I feel like I haven't actually processed most of it, which I really do need to do at some point. I need to stop and reflect.
So you set a goal and then you get there maybe quicker than you thought you would, but you kind of don't even have time to acknowledge it, and then you're setting the next goal and moving on to the
next
thing.
So in a way, I didn't set any of these goals, and so actually, even though it's all been wonderful, it would be nice to stop and just take a minute and appreciate the fact that these things have happened.
I think that's very modest though, to say that it's happened to you, because I feel like you make your own luck, and all of the decisions that you've made along the way to get you here is why you're here. So it's sort of, you can't just give that all over to, you know, luck and chance.
Fate.
You made it happen.
Thank you. No, I think I agree to a point. How I got to where I am is also as a result of, it's probably not luck, it's probably privilege. And maybe they're not that dissimilar. And so whilst I know that I work hard and I have made the most of the situation, I'm aware that the situation wouldn't be presented to everybody. And so I guess in some ways that feels quite lucky.
Yeah. We have to talk about that quote from Nigella. You were featured as her book of the month. And I'm going to presume, because I think it's a safe assumption from anyone, that she is perhaps...
My best friend.
Yes. I was going to say culinary hero of yours, but yes, also best friend now. And how did that feel coming from the queen herself?
I sobbed.
Did you?
I sobbed. And to put this into perspective, maybe this is a humble brag, but the book was a Sunday Times bestseller. Mm. And that happened... sort of the week after publication, and the Nigella review happened the week after, and I would say the Nigella review was better.
Yeah, no, don't tell the Sunday Times, but yeah, I think a lot of people would agree.
Take it away from me.
And how does that come about? Did you know that she'd been sent the book? And I mean, she must get sent thousands of books, yeah. So to pick yours is a pretty big achievement.
Yeah, maybe that's luck, I don't know. But I was always kind of like, I know that Nigella would like this concept, and because it's
and
all
we'd
about,
be friends
and we'd be friends. I just know that we
no,
would.
It's a very Nigella concept.
Totally. It's very much self-care. It's very much, you know, the midnight chocolate fondant that you have in your pajamas, like, yeah. It's the same, they go hand in hand. And so kind of from the start I was thinking, we should, you know, we really just need to get this in front of Nigella, but obviously, yeah, that's not gonna happen. But I know my lovely publishing team reached out to her, I think probably several times. Yeah.
You've got to keep knocking.
Exactly. One of them stuck. One time she answered. So I think I found out, I can't actually remember. I didn't have that much notice before it came out. And then we weren't quite sure which day it was coming. And then on the day it did, yeah, I sobbed. And it was the quote as well, brilliant beyond brilliant idea, is a quote from The Parent Trap, which is like a very nostalgic film for me and my family. And I was just like, this is,
yeah, she knew,
this is perfect.
She knew, she knows you.
Exactly. Our souls are aligned.
Let's begin by talking about the first desert island dish. What's the dish that most reminds you of your childhood?
My family, my parents, were both very good cooks and traveled quite a lot before they had kids, and actually with us kids. And the dish that most reminds me of my childhood is a dish called lentil spaghetti, which I thought everybody ate. I thought lentil spaghetti was like spaghetti bolognese.
Okay.
And just, everybody knows what it is. It's like a classic Tuesday night meal for all families. And genuinely, I think I thought that until I was about 12 or 13, when we had somebody come over for dinner, we were like, we're having lentil spaghetti. He was like,
what is that? Well, so my mind is immediately going, is it spaghetti made of lentils? No. Is it
a bolognese
made with lentils?
It's akin to a bolognese made with lentils.
Yeah.
So this is my dad's mum's recipe that I think she wrote for him when he went to university.
Oh.
And my dad did quite a lot of the cooking. Well, I think they split it, but my dad did a decent amount. He's a very good cook, and he actually passed away when I was 10. But lentil spaghetti was kind of his dish.
Yeah.
And it's actually onions, garlic, and then spices, so like ground cumin, ground coriander, a few other things, then your lentils, and then your tinned tomato. So it's kind of like a bolognese and also not like a bolognese at all, but you eat it in the same way, on top of spaghetti with lots of cheddar. I've just never known anybody else eat it, and I think that that's very reminiscent of our family, because we ate quite a lot of things that not most families ate, I think.
Oh, do you think?
Yeah, or just like takes
like quite exotic.
I mean, not always exotic. We had things like kedgeree and stuff, which I feel like other families in East Yorkshire maybe weren't eating that much kedgeree.
Yeah.
Or if we had macaroni cheese, it always had nutmeg in and tomatoes like thinly sliced on top, and it was just always slightly odd, but in a really nice way.
And were you the kind of family, I think you've said on Tuesdays that was lentil spaghetti. Was it that kind of thing that every night you did know what you were having?
No, actually, as far as I was aware, it definitely wasn't.
Yeah. It wasn't
kind
like
of the same thing every week.
To Monday, because that was...
No, but no, it was always very, just really good home-cooked food. Both my parents were doctors, and they always wanted to feed us well. And then I feel awful, because I think about it sometimes, where if we ever had like fish fingers and chips and beans, I can't tell you how rare that was. I would sit there and I'd be like, Mum, this is the best thing I've ever eaten.
It's so depressing when that happens. Like, they gobble it up and you're like, but the thing I spent hours making for you, you didn't even give me any compliments on.
And I feel awful about that now, but I'm also like, no, actually, if you gave the choice to me now, maybe I'd still choose fish fingers, chips and beans.
Fish fingers are so good.
They're so good.
Yeah. Your childhood obviously did contribute to this huge love of food, but I'm always interested in the idea of nature versus nurture because mm-hmm. you have two siblings. Mm-hmm. Are they as passionate about food as you are?
No, in a short answer. I'd say we're from a very foodie family. So my dad was a very good cook. My aunties and uncles are very good cooks. And I'd say everybody loves eating.
Yes.
We're big eaters. But my brother and sister don't cook in the same way that I do.
Mm.
They both are good cooks, but it's never been a consideration for either of them. They've both kind of got their own passion, but we all love food a lot.
Now that I have children, it's something I think about a lot because I'm so passionate about food and I'm kind of pathetically desperate for them to also be passionate about it, but to the point where I'm scared I'm gonna push them the other way.
Yeah.
Now that you look back, was it just purely the home-cooked food and that passion for food that just, you think that was the catalyst for it? Or I wonder what it was about you in particular and your experience of childhood that made you love it more.
In that way, I actually think it's more nature because I genuinely can't remember a time before, like, food. For me, food has just always been my number one passion. I have a really awful memory, but I can remember what I've eaten. I couldn't remember who was there or why I was there, but I can, if somebody says, oh, we had this, I'll be like, I remember exactly what we ate.
It's so weird, isn't it? I have that too.
It feels so ingrained in who I am as a person, in actually a way that makes me wonder why I ever tried to do anything else as a career, because it makes so much sense that this is what I would do.
That brings us on to the second desert island dish. What was the first dish you learned to cook?
I do remember as very young children, our dad baking a cake with us, and we'd all take it in turns to, like, everybody gets one job. Somebody weighs the butter, somebody puts the butter in, somebody stirs the butter, which must have been awful for him.
It has to be very fair, otherwise all hell breaks
loose. Well, we'll fight. We fall. But in terms of the first thing I can remember being, like, memorising the recipe for, it was a shortbread recipe that actually my Auntie Helen taught me. I can't remember if it's either a Nigella or a Delia recipe, I think. And it has semolina in it. I'm pretty certain it was equal parts flour and butter and then half that amount of sugar and semolina. And that I remember, A, being like, this is the best shortbread ever. And it had a lovely little crunch to it from the semolina. And I made that so many times and I knew the recipe. She wrote it for me on a post-it note. And then I remember being like, I don't need the post-it note anymore. I know the recipe. So that one really sticks with me.
Yeah, because it's interesting to think lots of people are passionate about food as a child or growing up, but they're not necessarily interested in learning how to make it. They're just interested in eating it.
Yeah.
But it's strange to say this because you've achieved so much, but I think this journey really only began just over 18 months ago.
Mm.
And if I'm not mistaken, you listened to a podcast and within 48 hours of listening to that podcast, you'd quit your job and broken up with your boyfriend. So I have many questions about this. And my first question was, what was the podcast?
So the podcast was a classic one about people who are, like, very successful in their careers. And this woman was talking about how she just knew that she had to create this business. And it was so what she was meant to do. It was
a calling.
A calling, exactly. And I think I was already at the point in my head where I was like, oh, this job just isn't really fulfilling me. And yeah, that was on the Tuesday, and I remember calling my mum being like, I'm going to quit my job. And she was like, why? Are you sure? Actually, and then she was like, fine, go for it, whatever. Which was lovely, which also helps with this sort of thing. So yeah, I think I handed my notice in on the Monday. And then actually, the breakup didn't happen until the last day of my job. So a month after I'd worked my notice period.
Okay, sorry.
So I had the month. Not at all. Yes, I had my last day of work on the Friday, and then my 5.5 year relationship ended on the Saturday, and I began living by myself.
That's a lot of change in a short space of time, but do you think those two things were linked? Like, did that relationship feel like part of your life that felt over? Like, if you're changing career, that was sort of not who you were going to be moving forwards?
It wasn't planned, like, in that way where it was, like, fresh start. I think looking back at all, if one of those three things hadn't happened, I wouldn't be where I am now. And so it all makes sense looking back. But at the time, it was just complete chaos.
Do you really mean that? So the podcast, if you hadn't have listened to the podcast, what do you think another catalyst would have been? Or do you think you could easily have just carried on in that job for the next 5 or 10 years?
I think I could have done. There was definitely obviously inklings of, is this right for me? And I'd started my Instagram page very much as a hobby, but I was putting some work into it, and I was getting up early before work to, like, make the recipe to be able to shoot it at lunchtime just for fun because I enjoyed it, which makes me think that there would have been something else that made me think, oh, actually, if I'm enjoying it this much as a hobby,
yeah,
I'd love it as a job. So I'm sure there would have been something else, but if those three things hadn't happened at the same time, I don't think One Pot, One Portion would have happened because that came about because I was living by myself, trying to create content with variety and not do the washing up because there was nobody else to help.
So when you quit your job, you thought, now's the time that I can pursue food seriously. But what was the vision? Because there are so many different ways to work in food.
I think I quit to give myself some time to just take a little step back and think about what it was I wanted to do, because I loved the idea of food styling, but also of food writing. And content creation was never the plan. That was always very much, you know, this could just be a hobby. I never planned necessarily to grow the page. So I quit more with the idea to find the vision.
But when I hear that story, I mean, I think that's incredibly brave. Do you think you are a natural risk taker?
I think I'm very, sorry, this is morbid, but I think I'm very aware of death and, like, how short life is. I think just because of, you know, childhood experiences, I'm just very aware that we only have one life, and that taking opportunities can only ever be a good thing, and that nothing is permanent. When I quit my job, I was very much like, if this doesn't work, I will happily go back and get another job. And I have no shame in saying that didn't work. So I guess in that way, I think I'm very keen to explore as much of what life has to offer, and quitting my job and trying something new is part of that. And I think that that's probably quite inherent in me and what motivates me as a person.
You're so right. Like, every stage of life is so transient, but whatever stage you're in, it can feel like that is just life now and it's going to be like that forever, but it's not, because you just don't know what's around the corner.
Exactly.
And talking to people who have done interesting and exciting things, that doesn't just happen to people. Like, people, you have to take a risk and you have to put yourself in different situations.
Yeah, you just, you need to be able to give yourself permission to try those things and then see what happens. And that's kind of the only way to explore.
We're on to the third desert island dish. What's the best dish you've ever eaten?
I think this is the hardest question to answer. And I think my answer might actually be very disappointing. And I think I'm very lucky. I live in a great city with lots of food. I eat out quite a lot. Like, I've had lots of lovely meals, but none of them came out to me as, like, that one was incredible. And then I had this vision pop up of when I was about, I think, 4 or 5, I had an operation and had to have an anaesthetic. So I went to sleep and I wasn't allowed to eat beforehand. Had the operation, woke up and was in a bit of pain. And I remember sitting on my mum's knee and crying. And then the lovely nurse brought over a piece of white buttered toast on one of those plastic flower plates from IKEA.
Oh, yeah.
And it was cut into squares. And I'm a squares person, not a triangles person with toast.
Okay.
It was cut into squares.
Controversial.
Yeah, I know. And also, we were a brown bread family. We did not have white bread. And so this piece of white buttered toast is one of the best things I've ever eaten. And it, like, it cured me and it just gave me comfort. And I think if that's not the best meal I've ever eaten, what is?
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
That all those years later, that's what you remember.
I know, down to the plate.
But I love that. I think that's, like, the power of food and how...
Totally.
Why I find it so interesting doing this podcast is because it is about food, but it's about the stories behind the food. Mm-hmm. And people, I think, get so worried about creating fancy dishes and exotic ingredients, and that's so rarely what it's about.
Yes, and if food isn't making you feel good in some way, kind of like, what's the point?
Yeah.
Like that's what matters to me. And that's not to say I don't appreciate lots of lovely food and flavours and fancy things, but...
I'd rather have a piece of white sliced bread.
Amen.
We're going to skirt over the fact that you prefer squares to triangles. I mean, that's just...
I will never change that answer.
Like a sandwich, you're going to cut it into squares.
I wouldn't cut it into squares because I'm not four anymore.
I mean, that's a whole different...
But I would cut it in half.
Would you?
What would that be? Horizontally.
Like a rectangle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And depending on the bread, like there's a good side and a bad side.
Oh.
Mm.
Okay.
But you know how the bottom half is always a bit drier?
Oh, yeah.
And then the top half is normally chewier?
I'm with you for cucumber sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
They are better square than triangle.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say also egg mayonnaise is a square sandwich, not a triangular sandwich.
I think I'd agree with you there. Although, I think all of them should be. I just don't cut them up at all and just have like a fat sandwich.
Oh no.
Yeah,
no.
I'm quite big on
what
that
are
as well.
You? A
some heathen.
Kind of animal. Your first career was working in the charity sector, and I've heard you say that you were nervous to work in food because you didn't want to lose your passion for cooking, which... is so relatable. Cooking was also my hobby and now it's my work, so what are my hobbies?
Yeah.
But you haven't found that to be true? You love it as much as you did before?
I do. I'm having a crisis about what my hobbies are, actually. That was a big thing. I have no interests.
You're worried about that from a personal point of view, or are you worried about like sitting at a dinner party and someone asks you what your hobbies are and you don't have an answer?
Both. I'm just generally quite worried.
I get very stressed about that. Like you have to make something up that makes me sound really interesting.
It's why I can never be employed again, because in a job interview, if they ask me what I do for fun, I'll say absolutely nothing.
So after you left your job,
you
started posting online in a sort of serious way. I know you'd been doing it before, and it was pretty immediate that One Pot One Portion came about, and I think the reaction to that was pretty instantaneous.
Pretty much. It happened about a month after the first post, and I kind of figured that people in a similar situation to me would resonate, you know, single people in their 20s. I just never expected what happened to happen, and it just hasn't slowed down that much since.
So was it one video that you posted and then it was just like a light bulb moment of, hang on, I'm actually might be onto something here?
Probably the first three videos all kind of went viral at the same time. So I went from 15,000 followers to 100,000 in about a week.
Really?
Yeah. And I just remember waking up every day being like,
ping, ping,
oh my
ping,
God,
ping.
We're at 20,000, 30,000, 40,000. Like, it was insane. And one of those videos, I think, is on about 12 million views, which actually in the grand scheme of viral videos on social media, it doesn't feel like
that's
crazy.
I
mean, it's quite
a lot.
Yeah.
Well, imagine if all of those people were standing together.
That would be terrifying.
It would be very scary.
Yeah.
What people always say about business ideas is that you can't just sit at home thinking of a business idea. And the best way to come up with an idea is actually something that relates to you and it's solving a problem. And that feels exactly what you did kind of unintentionally. You're cooking the recipes you're cooking because that was what you yourself needed.
Yeah.
And then it must have been very comforting to realize that so many other people were relating to the situation you were in.
Yeah, absolutely. I always say that I only started this series for myself because actually it was what I needed at the time. I couldn't have asked for a nicer way to start my career because it's only ever felt authentic and not forced, and having people relate to that from all walks of life, you know, people in my situation, but also older people whose children have left home, or, you know, grandparents who are maybe by themselves now, or divorced parents who are alone at the weekend, that kind of thing.
Mm.
It's just incredible, and it is the thing that keeps me going on social media in particular, because sometimes there are times where I'm like, I just want to delete this and I don't want to post
a
video. Oh my God.
You've had moments of that.
Other week, maybe.
It's just not worth it.
Only because I think it's more of an imposter syndrome thing. It's more of a self-doubt thing than it is a negative space to be in, because it's a lovely space to be in. And especially the messages I get from people are the best things and have made me cry on so many occasions because they're so heartfelt and comforting. But yeah, it's definitely a hard job for me sometimes, just because I don't feel like I produce content that's that good or whatever. But then I hear from people and I think, well, actually, as long as you're liking the recipes, that's kind of the main point.
I think it's just impossible not to have imposter syndrome, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Like, I think maybe you have to be quite a strange person to think that you're just always amazing.
Yeah, probably slightly insufferable.
But I was going to ask you about that because of the particular area of food that you found yourself in. Mm. You are like the poster girl for one portion cooking, and so you must get a lot of messages from people who you are really helping.
Yeah, totally. And it's by far the best part of this job. And you know, people have said that it's helped them fall in love with cooking again. Maybe they're suffering from a bad mental health period, or they've only ever cooked for a family and now they're by themselves and they weren't expecting it. And to have the comfort through food is the only thing I ever want to give people, is kind of that comfort and that accessibility through recipes. So it's just the best part of the whole job. Yeah.
I'm a bit worried about the next question because we're onto the fourth desert island dish, but hearing that you eat sandwiches without cutting them in half. I'm just joking. What is your favourite sandwich?
Okay, so I'm cheating slightly, but only because I think I have a sandwich formula as opposed to a sandwich.
Okay, give it to me.
So, obviously it has to start with a good bread, which for me is either a focaccia, a bagel, or maybe like a ciabatta. Mm-hmm. It has to be fairly soft with a bit of chew. I don't want sourdough.
No, I know.
I'm sorry.
What, it like rips your mouth apart.
It's not good.
I don't understand.
I don't want it. Unless it's toasted.
And maybe crustless. But like, yes. The crusts are so aggressive.
It's a lot. And
toasted ones. Yeah. Like, it's painful.
Totally. And I'm a northerner, despite not sounding like it. And I like wet food. And a sourdough crust is dry. And you have to have so much sauce and it just doesn't work.
Yeah, no, I agree.
I think focaccia is probably the number one. So that's number one. Number two, a meat of some sort. Number three, a cheese. Number four, a pickle. Number five,
what's your pickle of choice?
A cornichon.
A big one.
No, a little one.
Yes. The little ones that come with those little tiny onions.
Yes.
Where do little tiny onions come from?
I don't know.
So good.
So a pickle, I can't remember what number up to now. Maybe five, four? I don't know. A crunch. A crisp.
Yeah.
It's a crisp.
Yeah.
And then the last one is a sauce. So
I like this.
Yeah. And it just, like, it works for any sandwich. So
sandwich
obviously.
Mats.
Yeah. Yeah.
Let's make sandwiches
exactly.
Even more fun.
Algebra. So you could go for your, like, a ham and cheese. But if you add a cornichon, if you add a salt and vinegar crisp, and if you add a sauce, maybe like a mayonnaise of some sort, that is a better sandwich. It has everything you could want.
Yeah.
Or like, I love a tuna melt. Great on its own. You've already got your tuna, your mayo, your cheese. Add a pickle and add some salt and vinegar crisps. And that's a better sandwich.
So for the tuna melt, would you melt it and then once it's all melty and hot, you kind of open it up and stuff in the crisps? Or are you just one bite after another?
Oh, I would heat it all up.
I would
squish it down. I also think a sandwich has to be slightly squashed.
Okay.
Like,
yeah, no, yeah,
like
I agree
compact.
With that.
So it all, like, I don't want it falling everywhere.
No.
Yeah.
Of course not. I was just going to say, I don't know. Don't be so silly. But no, I don't know if I've ever eaten warm crisps, which I'm.
Is it?
Have I?
No, I don't think about it. I don't know. I have. Although I did see a recipe the other day. You can cut this out.
What was it?
I saw a recipe the other day for nachos using just normal crisps. And you heat them in the oven. And then you put over... This one was Iberica
ham. The naked
ham.
Crisps.
Yeah.
Just heat them.
Warm up some naked crisps. Take them out. And lay over Iberico ham. And then the heat kind of slightly melts the fat. And then cheese. And then I think she did pickles and stuff as well. I was like, I've never... Obviously, you'd think to bake a tortilla chip, but you wouldn't bake a...
Yeah, that's true.
Prawn cocktail, Chris. But maybe we should be.
Maybe there is a reason we haven't. But maybe there isn't.
Maybe we shouldn't find out.
You should find out and you
I
tell me.
I will report back.
I expect a full report. Very into this sandwich formula. If you had to pick, like, one all-time favourite sandwich, what are you going for?
As of where I am in my life right now, I think it would be a steak and crisp sandwich with chimichurri.
Oh, yes.
So it's like a fat wedge of ciabatta, medium rare steak, salt and vinegar crinkle cut crisps. The chimichurri is the sauce. I will say this sandwich doesn't have cheese in it, but I would add mozzarella,
yeah,
probably.
Yeah, that could be nice.
Because I want the stringiness.
Yeah. You talk a lot about the idea of the joy of cooking for yourself and thinking of it as a form of self-care. I wondered, when you're cooking for yourself, how much of it is about the end result and what you're actually going to eat, and how much of it is about the benefits of the process of cooking?
I think that depends on whether you're asking, whether it's cooking for work or cooking for myself. Because I think that that's, when you do this as a job, sometimes it can be more about the end result. But I am always thinking about how the people that are making my recipes would feel as they make it, even if I, at the time, I'm hectic and stressed and like trying to film five recipes in a day and it's not enjoyable in any way. But if I'm just cooking for myself, I do love to make the atmosphere nice, you know, music and maybe a candle and just taking a bit of time, because it's a huge form of self-care and it's so easy and accessible because we do it however many times a day. And even if it is only 10 minutes and you're making something super quick, there can be something so peaceful about that. And
it's a time to decompress.
Yeah. And I think it's just so nice to give yourself permission to enjoy it and to not have to think that food is fuel. Like, food is so much more than that. Food is so hugely culturally significant in so many ways. And I think kind of recognizing that and taking the time to appreciate that is really fun as well. And enjoyable. So I'd say it's kind of a bit of both.
People do, I think, often think that it's just not worth cooking a meal if they're just cooking for themselves, which is sad to think about. And I know it's something that Nigella talked about a lot in How to Eat and is one of her sort of overriding messages. I feel like you found a real gap in the market, that it isn't something that people talk about that much, even though probably the majority of people are cooking alone.
8 million Brits live alone.
Really?
And that's just people that live alone, which is why that's my like amazing slogan is cook, eat or live alone. Because even if you have a family, there will be some point probably in your week where it's just you, even if it's just for breakfast or lunch.
So 8 million people live alone?
In the UK.
Really?
Yeah. Isn't that insane? That is... And why haven't they all bought my book?
Have they not?
Yeah, rude.
That is unbelievable.
It is. I mean, part of this is probably I studied anthropology at uni and I'm hugely into people and culture and the cultural significance of food. And I think it's so interesting that doing things alone and specifically doing things for yourself by choice feels very taboo in the UK, at least. And I kind of just want to talk about it all because I think it's so joyous when you give yourself the time to invest in yourself. And I think it's also about permission because it can... Everybody, we've always been told that being selfish is bad. And I just don't think it has to be. I think being selfish just means investing in yourself.
Yeah.
As long as it's not at the expense of other people. But for the most part, it's not. This is just dinner we're talking about.
And being... I think there's like a confusion in people's brains. Like being alone and being lonely aren't the same thing. So it's kind of admitting that you're on your own and you're cooking for one is like not remotely embarrassing. It's not like publicly saying you're very lonely and as you know, there might be lots of people that you could be eating with, but for whatever reason you're eating alone, and that's okay.
This is such a big thing for me as well, because I think people automatically assume that if what I'm doing, I am alone all the time and I will be single forever and all of these sort of
things. That's now your brand.
None of that's
be alone. I'm just joking.
No, but people kind of assume this, that you're only doing it because that's the situation you're in. I'm like, no, I'm doing this by choice. And no matter what situation I'm in, I will hopefully always choose to have some time by myself, because I think it's so important to have that relationship with yourself and to invest in yourself as much as you invest in your relationships and your friends and your work and everything else. And I think it genuinely, I think, changes you as a person slightly when you just kind of switch that in your head to think, I deserve this. And even if you are sort of living by yourself and you do feel lonely at times, I don't think you always have to be thinking, this is amazing.
Yeah.
I love doing this by myself. It doesn't mean you
can't. And being lonely isn't a permanent state. You can be alone and then have moments of feeling lonely and like you wish you were with someone else, but then go back to being like, oh, this is actually quite nice. It's not a sort of, a permanent state that you have to be in.
And even if you're lonely, I'm also a big believer that food can kind of bring you whatever you need. It doesn't always have to make you happy or feel like, if you're feeling sad, I think you can make food that kind of fits with that. It's not about like emotional eating. It's more about thinking, okay, I'm just not feeling great. And actually, I don't want to spend an hour making dinner, but I do just want to eat home cooked food. Mm. And it can fit with your mood so well. And when you're alone, there's nobody else to think about. So you might as well tune in with yourself and think, what do I need from my food right now? And how can I make a recipe that fits with that? And that's why my book is structured by mood and not by, you know, time or meal type, because when you're alone, you can eat whatever you want, whenever you want.
Yeah.
And it's that self-care, almost mindfulness element of checking in with yourself, seeing what you need and making food based on that.
Yeah, it's flipping it around and seeing it not as a negative, it's a positive. And so maybe this isn't a book that you're going to use for every single meal, but it doesn't mean that it's not a book that's going to be really helpful for certain times of your life or times of the week or whatever.
Exactly.
Right. Well, on to the fifth desert island dish. What's the dish you eat the most often?
I feel like I don't repeat meals that often because I'm always trying to think of new recipes to create. But the one that I keep coming back to at the moment is brothy pasta with beans and greens. So it's kind of like a pastry cecchi, just kind of leftover pasta, some chickpeas or cannellini beans in really good stock, a handful of spinach leaves and loads of pecorino. Mm. And every time I eat it, I think, I can't believe how good this is, considering it was so easy and there's not that many ingredients in it.
Mm.
And I feel like it's kind of a good all-rounder because it's kind of fresh, it's good for summer, but it's also really comforting. And I love food that you can eat with a spoon out of a bowl. Like, that's my favourite type of food.
Like, pasta and beans, in my mind, it shouldn't work, but it's so good.
Have you ever had pasta with baked beans?
No. No, I haven't.
Yeah, me neither. Don't really try it.
I really missed out on that. I can pretend.
Haven't had it for years.
I love babies on a jacket potato.
Right.
Or so you'd have it like a... You just.
I mean, I would like to find out. I genuinely haven't had this for years. But
I'm a bit shocked by you, Eleanor. You eat sandwiches without cutting them.
I know.
And you're just pouring beans all over your spaghetti.
I'm awful.
No, but that's like a comfort dish.
I mean, I think... It's not even necessarily a comfort dish. It's more just like if
I regret bringing it up.
I do. Please. I haven't eaten a beer. But like if I only had pasta and baked beans in my cupboard, I would still be like, oh, cool. There's a dinner there.
Yeah.
I'd be happy.
You've got to get creative. Yeah. Doesn't matter where the ideas come from. One thing I heard, which can this be true, that you wrote your cookbook in 12 weeks?
10.
Really? I mean, that's kind of... Like the fame, I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, Nigella, if you're listening, we're obviously both huge fans. But she wrote How to Eat in 6 weeks.
Six.
Which was like, I mean, unbelievable. But I think she'd been sort of mulling it over for years. And I think I read that the chapters were actually ones that she'd sort of previously written and they didn't have a home. And then they all came together.
Oh, so she just compiled in 6 weeks.
Though. Well, I mean, Nigella can do no wrong. I think she did a lot of really hard work and put it together. And now I'm sweating. but 12 weeks, I mean, I think normally people take a year, don't they?
Yeah, so I technically had 6 months.
But even 6 months, to me, that doesn't sound very long.
No, part of that was my own choice. I kind of wanted to publish this year.
Oh, okay.
And my lovely publishers were like, we can make it happen, but you need to have it written by October. And this was in the March. And I said, absolutely fine. I'm going to culinary school for 3 months.
You went to Ballymaloe.
I went to Ballymaloe. Did you?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I didn't know that.
It's quite all-consuming, Ballymaloe. I mean, it's obviously, it's enormous fun, and I don't know if you felt like this. I kind of felt, oh, maybe this is how I was meant to feel at university. I was just like so eager and in every lecture and in early and, you know. But it's quite tiring and it is all-consuming.
Oh, it's completely exhausting.
You couldn't have written a book.
No, I think naively I thought beforehand, I was like, oh, I can do a little bit in the evenings, in the weekends. I've actually never cooked less, like in my own free time.
Oh, no, you're just like eating sourdough and...
Yes.
So you got back and then it meant you actually had a very small window.
Yeah, so I got back. I moved back to London after being away for a couple of years and moved into a new flat with new flatmates and said, I'm really sorry, I've got a book to write. Like, you don't get any fridge space anymore. Yes. Took over and I...
Well, they kind of minded that.
They were very lovely and gracious and tried all of the many different takes.
What a hardship for
them. I know. Thank God it was only one portion, because if I was making full-size lasagnas
book had been 12 portions, 12 dishes.
Awful.
Yeah, that would have been
really horrendous, actually.
Yeah.
But yeah, I was just quite regimented. I was like, this is what I have to do every day. You get up, you write your shopping list, you go to the shop, you come back, you test.
Because you've obviously got this enormous social media page. Did you find it hard deciding what you're going to share where? Like, what are you saving for that? You're saving best for book.
I think I kind of had, but also I sort of couldn't really keep up with doing social media at the same time. So okay. I wasn't sharing that much.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would have been a lot. But yeah, I think the book is definitely my best recipes yet, which I'm really glad about. And even though I wrote it very quickly, there is nothing in the book that I haven't tested many, many times.
Well, onto the sixth desert island dish. What's your go-to dinner party dish?
So, I don't have as many dinner parties as I would like to. But what I love at the moment is, I quite like fairly big sharing platters. So, I would do a roasted or pan-fried chicken with chimichurri. I think chimichurri is just so good.
Yeah. It's so good with so many things.
It makes everything good. Mm. Like, you could put it on anything and people will think you're a professional chef.
Yeah. And it's so easy.
But don't tell them. No. Exactly. And if there was a veggie, maybe like paneer or tofu with chimichurri. Mm. Then I would do some roasted aubergines in spices, probably like sumac and cumin, maybe a bit of za'atar or something. With yogurt and pomegranate seeds and coriander and either pine nuts or crispy onions. Mm. Then I would go for maybe like a saffron rice. That's kind of the base. And then if I had time, I'd maybe make a little flatbread and like a yogurty sauce. Like, I just kind of like, I'm a feeder and I just want people to have loads, yeah. Like food in abundance. And I quite like people being able to pick what they want and kind of making it suit their tastes. Mm. So I feel like that's kind of what I'd go for.
Yeah, it sounds
at
great.
The moment. Do you want to come for dinner?
Yes, please. When are you free?
All the time. What,
and do you normally serve a pudding? Are you a pudding person?
I am a pudding person, absolutely. I'm kind of a believer that a pudding has to be like pretty stodgy. Like, again, I think it just has to be like bread and butter pudding, apple crumble, or like a cake that feels like a pudding. Probably warm, almost always with custard or ice cream. Maybe both, but not cream. I'm not really a cream person.
Hey, God, I know. Loads of controversial opinions. No, that's fine. I'll forgive you.
Yeah, I want just like, comfort.
Yeah.
And
we're coming into your season now.
We are. Honestly, it was raining last week and I was like, thank the Lord, because I hate being warm.
Yeah. And like autumnal winter food is just... very good.
It's what I live for.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
On Desert Island Dishes, we have a cookbook corner. What is your most treasured cookbook?
So, most treasured for me is different to most used.
Mm.
So, this is not a book that I use now. It's it's called something like the Step by Step Children's Cookbook.
I love how you had to preface that by saying, I obviously don't use it now.
I know how to get it. The Step by Step Children's Cookbook, I think she's by Angela Wilkes, I think. And it's so hugely nostalgic to me, and probably where, if without that book, this book wouldn't have happened. Mm. And I have so many memories of making the recipes in that book, which I'd kind of forgotten about until I flicked through it, and then I remember, and I think, oh my gosh, I made that pavlova, or I made that chicken curry, or...
Oh wow, so it had quite complicated things in
it.
Yeah,
no, it was definitely... I mean, it also had, like, fruit skewers, where you stick grapes on a stick. I have so many memories associated with that book, and I remember, actually, when my dad was in hospital at one point, and again, I would have only been 9, I made him a cake to take to the hospital from this book, and it had a strawberry, it was a face, and it had like a strawberry lace mouth filled with hundreds and thousands.
Wow.
And it had like chocolate things for the eyes, and it had this like triangles around the edge that was kind of like hair. And I remember it so vividly, walking into the hospital and being so proud of this cake.
You must have loved that.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, I don't know, I loved it. No, I'm sure he did. So I found the book in a charity shop a couple of years ago, and just the feeling that it brought back was so intense that that has to be my most treasured book now. And as I say, don't use it, but...
No judgment if you do. We're on to the final seventh desert island dish. What is the last dish you would choose to eat before being cast off to the desert island?
Okay, so my ultimate desert island dish, I think, would be, for starters, maybe a caprese salad. So really good quality buffalo mozzarella, nice tomatoes, not fridge cold, none of it, not even the mozzarella. Everything has to be room temperature. Basil, really good olive oil, salt. I think that would be my starter, maybe with some focaccia on the side. And then for my main course, these don't go together in any way, but I would have a Massaman curry with tofu puffs and potatoes in the curry with a sticky rice, because I love any kind of coconut milk broth or coconut milk curry. And I love a tofu puff. Mm. They soak up all the liquid and they kind of explode in your mouth and they're just incredible. So I think I'd have that as my main course. And then pudding has to be school dinner apple crumble with custard. And very specifically, school dinner.
Okay.
It has to be school dinner apple crumble where it's stodgy. It's like 50% crumble, 50% fruit. The middle section is claggy.
Yeah, no, that's in the right word. Way.
It's yeah, it sticks to the roof of your mouth. And if it doesn't stick, I don't want it. With custard, both warm, nothing hot, nothing cold, just warm. because then I also figure I would be so full and tired.
Yes.
That I'd be like, send me to the island. As long as I can sleep on the way or while I'm there, I'll be happy.
I like the way you're thinking. Yeah. Very tactical. Very delicious. Eleanor, those are your desert island dishes. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you for having me.
So there we have it. Another delicious day of desert island dishes. Don't forget you can find me on Instagram at Desert Island Dishes, where you'll find snippets from the interviews, lots of recipes, and much, much more. You can visit the website desertislanddishes.co or sign up for my weekly newsletter, Dinner Tonight, where I share one easy and delicious weeknight recipe. And you can find that at dinnertonight.substack.com. Thank you again to Mould and Salt, our sponsor for this season of Desert Island Dishes, for helping us bring the podcast to you each week. And thank you so much for listening. Bye.